Good evening, everybody. Derek Old School Fournier coming to you live from Studio 76, as was teased in our intro. Big thanks to Macon Birkins for that. I'm going to need to see if I can get him to drop me one of those that's got no location in case we use it at a live show somewhere, which we will be having soon, by the way. Welcome to the show tonight. I know it's been a couple of weeks. It feels like it's been months. It has been an eternity, it seems. I actually had the audacity to take a vacation. And when instead of taking my laptop on vacation, I actually said, fuck it, and took a vacation. So I do apologize. I know you guys probably missed the show. Why do I say that? You know, radio people always say that kind of shit. I guarantee no one is sitting out there waiting for that show to be on. I guarantee that that's not the case, especially this show. But even shows like The View, when a lot of people want to watch it. But at any rate, welcome to the broadcast. I hope that you guys are enjoying your summer vacation, if this is summer vacation for you and kids and that sort of thing, though. We are almost to the point where we're talking real football. And that has got to get you guys pumped. I saw my man Skip Brown put the video from the Bucks about the 2014 season up today. The conversations, the excitement level is palpable, as people with good vocabularies would say. It is actually... probably, I think I read an article by Scott Reynolds today where he said that the excitement hasn't been this level since John Gruden was here. And I don't know that that's not true, to use a double negative and confuse the shit out of everybody, but I do know that I haven't sensed this much excitement with a bunch of data behind it. I mean, we had excitement because it's a new season, or we drafted someone interesting, or we got a free agent, or whatever the case may be. There's always little pockets of excitement. But this offseason has been different. And I want to encapsulate a little bit of that, but I want to do a couple of announcements first. I just want to let you know what we're going to be doing on the show tonight. We are going to be joined by the ginger badass Mark Cook of Pewter Report. Will be joining us at about 9:30 to chat with us about a couple of things, not the least of which being the event at Keelan Curley that I know a number of you attended. I apologize to anyone who I said I was going to be there. I got stuck at a charity event from my old high school. It went much, much later than I anticipated, and by the time I got out of there, there was no way in hell I could make it over. So I do apologize for folks that I misled, but as I understand, it was a good time. And we'll talk to Mark about that some more. We'll also talk a little bit about our schedule, which is now published, and I will make that schedule available. We're working on the integration of our unified calendar to our website, so the events are all up there, and linking that to our Facebook events as well to make all this stuff a lot easier for you guys to keep track of what we're doing. Because to be honest, I was looking at the schedule with the team, and I mentioned this, I think, in the last broadcast. You know, I talk sometimes in passing about how I work with Spent on this and I work with Spent on that. And certainly Spent and I work together a lot on a lot of things. But there's a team of probably 12 to 17 folks that we work extensively on our events and things like that. And then there's another round of probably 15 to 20 folks who assist us. We have a team of probably 30 to 35 folks that absolutely are integral in the things that we do. And I want to make sure that I thank those guys more often than I have in the past, because I need to do that. I want to send out a couple of big shout-outs. We mentioned this before, but I want to mention it again. It is great to be back at home at the Wing House. And for those of you who don't remember what the Wing House brings, I will change the image momentarily to remind you that is, of course, our favorite Jackie. And I can't say favorite. She's my favorite, maybe, but it's not everyone's favorite. We are back at the Wing House this season. We will be back at the Wing House. In fact, we'll be back at the Wing House on Friday for our meet and greet. So I want to look at the transition. It's almost like I know what I'm doing here. We will be at the first training camp session, which starts at 4:30 on Friday afternoon. We'll get our first glimpse of the 2014, squad and get to see what's going on and see what we got going on, see the players. And then after we either get rained on or lightning that or get to see an entire practice or whatever, a lot of us are going to run over to Wing House at 8001 West Hillsborough Avenue. We're going to have a meet and greet over there. So if you can, it's Friday night. Maybe you guys can come out and hang out with us. It'll be a good time. I see Buck Beast in the chat room is making sure that we know that, Mark Cook is no badass. And I will make sure you know that our tongue is firmly in cheek when we call him a badass, but it's a cute name anyway. And when you say cute, it takes away the badass tone anyway. So with regards to Wing House, reminders of what's going on with Wing House, that will be our home for our events. What the Buck events will be there. The watch parties will be there. Our kickoff party will be there. Now, we haven't talked a lot about this. We haven't talked a lot about the kickoff party, but I need to talk a lot about it right here at the beginning of the show. But before I do that, I have to make two other announcements. One, welcome back, Steakhouse Elite. For those of you who did not come to our tailgates last year, you missed a really interesting thing that was released by Steakhouse Elite, a company out of Oregon. Kobe Beef Burgers and Dogs, they are freaking phenomenal. They jumped on with us last year as a sponsor. They stepped the game up this year. There's going to be something really special at our tailgate this year that I cannot tell you about yet. But there will be an opportunity for a VIP experience sponsored by Steakhouse Elite. They came in as a platinum sponsor this year, so thank you very, very much. Calico Jack just mentioned they've opened up Monday's practice to the public as well. I saw that, and I think they had a time change as well for one of the practices to earlier in the day. But we'll get those things updated. Make sure you're following the training camp updates on Buccaneers.com as well, because they are moving those things around from time to time. My guess would be because of weather projections, but then again, I've watched weather before, and I don't know that that'll help. The other thing I want to make sure I mention is I want to send a big shout-out to Terrell Hopkins and Elder Ford. For those of you who are local, you realize Elder Ford is one of the leading Ford dealerships here in the area. Very active in the charity circles. Terrell and our group have been friendly for now 2 years. We've talked about getting together and talked about getting together, and this year we finally got together. It's great to welcome them to the fold as a platinum sponsor as well. There are going to be some exciting things from Elder Ford at all of our events, as well as some really great gifts that they're going to be bringing to the table. So we've gotten some really, really good things going on. I apologize to you folks who are out of state. I would encourage you to try and plan a trip down here. Pick a game that looks like it's going to be uninteresting for folks. It's cheap to fly to Florida. We get you guys set up. We make sure that you know where to go, where not to go. We do a meet and greet the night before the game at Wing House, and then the game is worth it. So I know it's hard. I know it's not cheap. But definitely want to send a shout out to Steakhouse Elite. If you follow us on Facebook or Twitter, make sure you follow those guys on Twitter and Facebook and thank them for supporting a program like ours and the efforts that we do, because all of the, whether it be funds or product exchange or whatever it is that they give us in their sponsorship package, helps us do the things that we do. They give us degrees of freedom to go out and do the things that we do. We could not continue to expand and do the things we're going to talk about, like in the kickoff party, without the support of businesses like that. So please make sure you do that. And Kurt, I know it's not cheap for you to fly anywhere because you live in the middle of fucking nowhere. That shouldn't have surprised you. The map hasn't changed. We haven't been in Pangea for a long fucking time. Yes, it's expensive to fly from Australia or New Zealand or wherever. But at any rate, again, please do make sure you get out there, like their pages, thank them on their pages, tweet at them, whatever you can do. They're great people at both of those organizations as well as Wing House. And last but not least, we don't talk about it enough, but Crew of Blackbeard's Revenge, our pirate crew sister group, is essentially a platinum sponsor this year because at our tailgates, every game but one, we will have the pirate ship. And in fact, at the kickoff party, which will be August 9th from 7 o'clock till close at Wing House, the pirate ship will be there as well. So, big thanks to Crew of Blackbeard's Revenge. They always, always do all that they can to help us out, which is absolutely amazing. And Bob, I'm sure you do miss Pangea. It was great. It made it really easy to travel by car. And since the world's only 2,000 years old, we probably had them then. I went to school in Polk County. I'm sorry. So, August 9th, 7 to close. If you are not planning to be there, plan to be there. The theme to this year's party is Back to the Future. Because we're trying to get back to the future. We brought Lovie Smith back. We brought Hardy Nickerson back. We're trying to get back to the Super Bowl. We thought it would be a cute theme. We thought there'd be all sorts of neat things that we could do. And I am actually going to make an announcement right now that no one else knows. At our party at Wing House, if you recall from last year, if you were one of the 1,200 to 1,300 people who came to that party last year, and I'm not making this shit up, we had what we called our green carpet, which was like the red carpet for famous people, right? Ours was a green carpet because it's a football field and we're really creative. So that's about the extent of our creativity. When we decided to go with Back to the Future, we talked about maybe doing, trying to find a DeLorean. We thought it'd be really cool to have a DeLorean because I was brought up during the Back to the Future generation, right? So I remember this movie. I remember Marty and Doc and Biff and these guys. Well, my buddy told me about one better. Coulomb Industries over in Oviedo, Florida, and we'll give you more information about those guys once we get a few more pieces of data from them, actually retrofit DeLoreans to look like the DeLoreans in the movie. If you go to DeLoreanTimeMachines.com, the gentleman over there, I worked with him. We have secured one of those DeLoreans for the kickoff party. It will be in the house for our kickoff party on the green carpet. You will be able to sit in it and take pictures in it. We have also secured actors from Universal Studios to play the roles of Marty and Doc. They play these roles at Universal Studios. They will be there for the duration as well. We are really trying to do this damn party up. And Kurt, you're absolutely right. We'll need a new and bigger green carpet. We're going to need a bigger boat. But that is an announcement that I wanted to make sure I made tonight. We will have the time machine in the house. We will have Marty. We will have Doc. It should be an amazing time. Thank you, Kurt, for dropping that link in there. Get a look at some of these cars. We'll have a couple of other little tidbits we can drop on you here as we make some announcements. But I am absolutely like a kid in a freaking candy store about this, guys. The team over there was great to work with to get this thing put together. So to give you the lay of the land, then we'll get into the Bucks news. I know you guys tune in for Bucks news. But we will have cornhole skills competitions run by WTB Commish. We'll have the pirate ship, which if you haven't seen it, and Kurt, you said who owns the pirate ship, the crew of Blackbeard's Revenge does. This is a pirate ship float for Gasparilla, the size of a semi-truck. That will be there. Music will be going outside that you can actually hear, which will help us, Kurt, because the PA system at Wing House is not the best. We'll have music going on inside as well, which will be awesome. We will have raffles, both item raffles and 50-50 raffles. For you out-of-towners, we are adding silent auctions online. So if you guys want to get in on some of these really, really nice things, you can silent auction online. It is going to be fucking spectacular. Oh, and there's going to be Wing House girls everywhere. And you do never know who's going to show up to these parties. Last year, Mark Dominic showed up. You never know who may show up. So make your plans. A bunch of us are staying at hotels local. We don't want people drinking and driving. We'll make sure you guys get taken care of. But it's going to be a great time. August 9th, spread the word. When we drop some little banners and stuff like that, get the word out there. We want to make sure Wing House feels the love. We want Elder Ford to see the love over there. Steakhouse Elite will get plenty of pictures. We will be doing it upright. I do feel bad for out-of-towners, but damn it, book your trips in here because it is going to be worth it. All right. Last but not least, people we should pay attention to. I still try and drop this every week. I like Bucks Nation a lot. Sandra P. and the crew over there. Leo, my man, Gore. Pewter Report, obviously we have an affinity for Joe Bucks fan still doing a great job over there. And I have to add to my list here, and Fish will probably give a little smirk about this. I've added Fish to the official list of the Bucks Brief podcast. I will add to that list. So you guys who've gone over there, hopefully you've enjoyed what Fish and his team do. I do. I think they're doing the right kind of stuff, the right kind of way. And it's great to have people out there. So thanks to all of you guys for producing this great content. It's terrific to have an ecosystem where the content is out there. And that's not to be a slight to the Tampa Tribune and any of the other folks, the professional journalists out there. But I tell you what, it's very nice to have good content, even when there's nothing to fucking talk about, which is right now. Now, right before training camp, though, we start getting kind of excited. Oh, last note. Sorry about this. We are collecting at the kickoff party as well as at Wing House right now on 8001 West Hillsborough Avenue. I think we've dropped off the collection bucket. If we haven't, it will be done this week. And at Elder Ford, we are collecting school supplies for local Hillsborough County school students who don't have the supplies. We're working through a local charity. I'll give you guys the name. I'll put it on the website. We'll collect those. We collected 2 truckloads of them last year. If you can bring some school supplies over, drop them off when you can. Run those collections. Any collections we do this year, by the way, any collection that we do, we will have collection points at least our Wing House on Hillsborough Ave and at least Elder Ford. We're trying to expand that to the other Wing Houses as well. So when we work with Vincent Jackson or we work with whoever, One Voice or The Spring, and we're doing these collections, we will have a great opportunity to get these things brought in a way that's a little bit more scalable. So big thanks to our sponsors for allowing us to do that. And a big thanks to the crew who goes around and picks all this stuff up and makes sure it gets delivered. All right, so I went out and I said, hey, it's great to have Sander and those guys doing the things that they do, because I actually believe that that's true. But I definitely have to take a little shot at Sander and the Bucks Nation crew. Now, it's not just at them. It's at everybody, because right now is that time. We talked about it 2 weeks ago, last time we spoke together, where people start putting together predictions. And they just ignore mathematics and means and averages and shit like that, and they start putting together what they're going to do. We have no idea what any of these teams are going to look like by and large. We don't know what anything's going to happen. We have no idea how teams are going to gel. We don't know what rookies are going to do, free agents are going to do. We don't know what system some teams are in. Fuck, we don't know what our offense is going to look like here, right? If I just look here, we don't have a clue. We could come out in the fucking wing tee for all we know at this point. Doesn't look like it's going to be a wing tee, but you don't know. We've got five running backs, and according to Jason Light today on 98.7 The Fan, we may keep all five of them. Shit. All right. But instead of talking about those things, people want to talk about predictions on records. I implore you, I beg you, fans, get your heads out of your asses. No one knows what the fuck our record's going to be. It is a throwing a dart at the wall. Move past it. Go to training camp. Read the reports on training camp. See what's going on. There's a lot of really interesting storylines. Carl Nix was cleared to play. Daniel LaRusso's going to fight? I can't believe it. We might see Carl Nix actually play football. Now, here's the problem. We've talked a little bit about this before. I don't know what our offensive line play is going to be like. Now, I read Scott Reynolds' training camp primer. We'll probably go into a little bit more depth on that when Mark Cook's on the show a little bit later. But I talked about this throughout the entire offseason. Typically, you're going to run power man or you're going to run some form of zone. My guess is we're going to run some form of zone. When you look at the way the offensive line was restructured, with the exception of Jeremy Zuda, we got more athletic, right? And that's, you guys know I was a huge Donald Penn fan, right? He's an athletic big man, but he's a big man. He is a powerful man. When you got those guys, you can run power. The guys we've got seem to be well-suited for zone, and that's fine. You can do either one successfully. It's not that one is better than the other necessarily. You typically want to use whatever system suits your coverage better. And it looks like our coverage right now is set up for zone blocking. Now, Carl Nix is a 350 to 360-pound beast. He is not your typical zone guy. When you had him and Donald Penn over there, if he had been healthy, that's a wall. So if we're going a different direction, then it's going to be very, very interesting to see who fits in that role. Oh, and by the way, Patches over in the chat room, I need to remind you guys, Patches continues to put out really great content. We don't do a lot of writing on our site because, well, I'm primarily illiterate. But Patches has been writing for us all offseason and been continually getting better and better. He just did another one of his Know Thy Enemy columns on the Carolina Panthers. I'll drop the link here because I actually happen to have it, and I won't make Kurt go do that, or make. I won't ask Kurt to go do that. If you're not reading these things, please get your asses out there and do that. Pimp these out. Patches is doing a great job. Our editor, Kerry, can't say enough good things about him. We've also got my man Connor Philpott writing an article on Mike James that is incredibly in-depth, and we've got to get through an edit phase, but it looks great. So big thanks to those guys. Mike, comment the article. What the fuck? Absolutely. The comments are back open, which is terrific. So at any rate, what our offensive line is going to look like is going to be critical, and this is the way it is every year. And I know that fans go to the practice and they want to watch guys catch footballs. They want to watch the interceptions when they happen. They want to see what the quarterback's doing, and that's great. The skill positions will always draw the attention. But it doesn't matter what kind of leader Josh McCown is. It doesn't matter how accurate he may be. It doesn't matter how willing he will be to take a risk and throw the ball down the field over the linebackers in front of the backs. If he is on the flat of his back, as the late Heath Ledger said in A Knight's Tale, he can't do shit. So, when we get out there Friday, what you'll see, what I suspect you'll see anyway, I don't know, we haven't seen Lovey and Jeff Tedford and the rest of the crew's training camp. We don't know what they're going to do. My guess is it will be not wholly dissimilar from other training camps that I've been to. When you see the fat guys run down and work on pads, you may want to go take a look. Maybe not Friday. Maybe wait till they get in full pads, right? I mean, I think they'll probably just be in shirts tomorrow. I don't know whether it's just shirts and, as they say, underwear, or whether they're in shells or what they're in on Friday. But we will continue to talk about what I'm looking for when I'm out there. And if Drew Hamilton, my buddy, comes out there, or me and you guys out there, we'll talk about that while we're on site. One of the nice things about training camp, if you've not been there, and I don't know in the chat room how many of you have not been there. No pads till Sunday. Thanks, Fish. Oh, Sunday's going to be great. Oh, I love training camp, guys. You guys know this if you've been with me. This is our ninth year. Football is religious for me. Going to the stadium, being out there, I'm not a nature guy per se, though I definitely love sunrises and sunsets. If you're on my Facebook page, you probably made fun of me for it when I'm on the water, and I talk about that kind of stuff. But being at a football field and the smell of the cut grass and the dew when it's in the morning, I actually like morning practices because I like the way the morning looks. It's hot as nuts in the afternoon. But being out there is absolutely almost religious for me. So when we're out there, I am quite obviously easy to spot. If you have questions or you want to hang out or whatever, I should be in the press chute or somewhere in that area. But I come across the rope all the time because I'm an asshole. And we can talk about any of these things while we're watching the practices. So Calico Jack says it seems to talk about power run game. They do, which is interesting about that. That said, when we say power run, it depends on whether they're talking about the actual run play itself or the blocking scheme in front of it. You know, you've got a number of staples of a spread offense that look like power. When you think about spread offensive line footwork, what you're doing is you're trying to create flow. The Denver Broncos did an amazing job of this for about, 14 trillion years. Every guy who ran the ball behind them ran for 1,000 yards. And what you're doing is you're getting the whole line moving in a direction. So it's either full flow right or full flow left. And it's about their footwork. So if you think about it, if it's a stretch right, let's say, it's going to be right foot, left foot, and then they're going to power through it. And they're looking for people to come across their midline. So if you're an offensive lineman, and the camera's a little bit off-centered here, but if this is my midline, if I'm going to the right, if the defensive player is inside of me, I don't care about him. I let him go to the next guy. There's someone to block him, right? I'm trying to get out to the next guy. And you can still run the entire repertoire of running plays with that offensive scheme, offensive line scheme, but it sets up beautiful cutbacks. So, Buck for Life wants to know if anyone watched or listened to the 620 Light interview today. There was some very good stuff. I was watching the Twitter sphere while that was going on, and that's why I made the comment about the keeping five running backs, actually, because I thought that was pretty excessive. But Jason Light seems to be a straight shooter. It'll be interesting to hear his subsequent press releases and see how he handles training camp as well. So, all right, well, we talked a little bit about the offensive line. We talked a little bit about training camp. I want to remind you guys, we got a little thing called the Hall of Fame induction where Derek Brooks is going to go in the Hall of Fame. A lot of us are making the trip up there. Do pay attention. We'll be broadcasting some stuff from up there as well. Did Kurt just call us a penal colony? That is awesome. I love it. If you are going to Canton, let us know. Drop us a note at questions or info at whatthebuck.net. We stay out in Dover with the Pro Football Ultimate Fans Association. A lot of us do. I think Kurt's actually in Canton. I think a couple of other folks are actually in Canton proper, as it were. But it'll be easy for us to get together. I know that we're on the field for Derek's induction. It's going to be a great weekend. It will mean I'll miss a couple of training camps, which I fucking hate, but it's a great trip. If you ever have a chance to do it, it is absolutely worth every penny, as much as it sucks to pay $200 or whatever for that shithole hotel that we stay at. But it's still a good time. I talked about Carl Nix, which is great. The other thing, the Tribune reported that Doug Martin's going to see fewer touches. This has been one of those conversations that's gone on, sort of throughout the entire offseason. Doug Martin's touches reduced. This should not surprise anyone. That's not a punitive action. That's about load balancing. Now, I've talked about this before, whereas I'm sort of the guy who likes the bell cow. You've got to see what your running backs are going to do. Whether you need a guy who gets a hot hand or whether you need a guy who get in there and grind people down, it depends on what those guys do. Now, in the chat room, Fish just commented that he's got them keeping four guys or four backs and no fullback, maybe five if they can't deal Bobby Rainey. I agree with Calico Jack in the chat room. I can't imagine them having no fullback. And they don't have any running backs that are stout enough that they could call him a fullback, right? They don't have the Ernest Graham who can go over and play fullback even though he's really a tailback. Unless the two guys we've got on the roster are just absolutely abysmal as fullbacks, I think they've got to keep one. Unless they can use a tweener tight end and have him come back, which is not a big surprise in the NFL nowadays, you've got to get one of your bigger tight ends to do that. Now, I haven't looked at the tight end roster enough because we've got ASJ, who's a split end. We've got Tim Wright, who's a split end. We've got Luke Stocker, who's hanging on to life by a thread. Don't hate me. I think Stocker and ASJ, there's no way. I don't think there's any way they put ASJ H-back. I've got to go watch more tape on ASJ, but I don't see what you guys see in him as a blocker, to be honest. I got to go look at that, and I'm going to look a lot at that when we're at camp. And Fish, if you're out there, let's make sure we pay attention to that because I do not see them taking a guy who's a specialist like that and having him back at H-back. Stocker I can see because Stocker can block, but Stocker's made of fucking tissue paper. Absolutely tissue paper. So we'll Bucks Beast just said, here's the thing about Stocker. Here's my little diatribe about Luke Stocker. His rookie year, he showed enough that I'm like, oh, man, this guy's got some chops. But it doesn't matter if you can't stay on the field. It just doesn't matter. I don't care how good you could be. Like we said before, potential just means you ain't done shit. So the depth chart stuff is always fun. Fish says Tim Wright even mentioned he's been lining up in the backfield. This is the thing, Fish. I wasn't at the event, and I don't doubt that. But if you put Tim Wright in the backfield, I think you're probably a little bit crazy unless you motion him out. I don't think that makes any sense to have Tim Wright back there as a blocker. That's not because I don't think Tim Wright's a talented guy. Tim Wright's not big enough in the ass to be an effective blocker, in my opinion. Now, he may have put on some more muscle. I'm not sure. Tim Wright, when I saw him in training camp last year, I said, listen, this is just a big wide receiver. He's going to be able to kill guys that are trying to cover a tight end because of what he is. But you can't just put someone back there and expect them to do the job because that's the job. Right? He'll get blown up. So this is an area we really got to pay attention to in camp. Now, it could also be the case that we see a lot of single back sets. This will be predicated on what the offensive line can do. Because you look at the way this sets up, if we have no fullback and we have no prototypical tight ends, guys that actually line up like a tight end, not line up like a split end, 2 to 6 yards away from the tackle, that front five better fucking block, guys. I mean, the numbers just tell you that front line has got to block. Now, Scott Reynolds in that same article talked about how Josh McCown will be expected to be more like a John Stockton distributor of the ball. Very Jeff Garcia-like, almost West Coast offense-esque. Here we got Mark Cook calling. Let's see what Mark's got about this. Good evening, Mark. How are you, sir?
I'm good, man. How's things going in your world?
You know, my world couldn't be better. We started the broadcast tonight, and I am absolutely excited because I realize that I'm going to be watching football on Friday.
And I just wanted to thank you for showing up Saturday. It was so good to see you at our event. We were thrilled and honored and privileged to have you in attendance at Keelan Curley on Saturday, so I just wanted to thank you for that.
And, I would expect nothing less than a cheap shot from the ginger badass. You've got a friend of yours in the chat room here. Said he's known you since you were 10 when you were still a woman. And he said that while you are, in fact, ginger, and I did not ask him how he could prove that, by the way,
right.
He did say you were not a badass.
Who's my friend in the chat room that knew me since I was 10?
It has scrolled significantly. I think it may be Buckbeast. Is it Buckbeast? Buckbeast, chime in here. I think it's you. We'll wait for him to chime in here. They're on about a 4-second delay. But at any rate, I actually did already apologize, and I'll apologize again.
You don't have to apologize. You were taking care of charity. That's the number one thing. Cheryl was there in full effect with a lot of your crew. And just briefly, it was really cool to meet a lot of these people that we've heard about in the chat room that I know is part of the big crew that you guys have. An awesome, awesome group of people. And surprisingly, they were very well behaved with alcohol. So I was completely shocked. The Pewter Report crew was behaved. The What the Buck crew was behaved. And the Pewter Report staff was well behaved. So as far as I know, I left about 7:15, and no one had been arrested yet. So I was very proud of that.
Well, that is absolutely, I think, a record. So that's commendable by all accounts. the gentleman in the chat room's name is James. He goes by Buckbeast 2097. He says he's known him since he was 10.
Well, the reason I'm not the GBA, as I was given that name in front of one of your crew's daughters, because she was quite young.
Princess Nasty, probably.
She's not allowed to use the A word. So GBA, the reason he says I'm not a GBA is because he's the original GBA, and he's fully equipped with all the freckles to prove it. Plus, this guy was a Marine, so he's a real BA, so hats off to him, even though he's a Gators fan.
Well, people can't be perfect, but thanks for the service there, James. And it's good to have someone with some dirt on Mark Cook other than my friend Bart Ross, who's not very useful in this regard. But welcome to the broadcast. For those of you who don't know who Mark Cook is, what is your official title at Pewter Report? It's editor-in-chief?
Editor-in-chief. And to be honest with you, I was thinking about that today. I don't know what in-chief means. Some people like to say editor and chief,
but that's wrong.
But I'm not going to get in the Redskins controversy, so no, I'm not a chief. But I am a Seminole fan, so I don't know if that has anything to do with it. But editor in chief / Bucks beat writer / anything that Scott needs me to do.
Well, it's good to have you with us, and we're looking very forward to our inaugural Pewter Report What the Buck podcast, which we'll talk about some potentially later in the show, and certainly going to be advertising a lot as we get into August. But what I want to do is jump right into some questions for you, Mark. You've got to be excited. It's going to get past all of the guessing and speculation. Can you tell us a little bit about what we can expect out of the conditioning drills and what the team looks like coming into that? Because that was a big deal. Remember, when Coach Shiano came here, he ran the 16-1-10s and kicked the shit out of everybody. What's going on at One Buck Place, and do we have any surprises in store?
Well, I don't know that Lovey didn't reveal it to us the last time we really had a good chance to talk to him. We'll see Lovey tomorrow at noon. We're going to be down there for a press conference. I considered getting up at 6:30 to watch the guys sleepily walk into One Buccaneer Place and decided not to do that. But I will be there at noon. Lovey's going to address the media. I think we'll know a little bit more specifically what his conditioning test will be. I can't imagine it being any tougher than Greg Schiano's, but you never know. I was talking to 98.7, the Fan Interference Show, earlier today, and the name Daquan Bowers popped up, of course, not just on TMZ, but on their show, too. And, you know, I think a lot of what happens to Daquan Bowers is going to be based on what happens during that conditioning test. If this guy comes into camp out of shape, as he admittedly was last year, as he looked during the OTAs this year, I really think that's a nail in the coffin for Daquan Bowers, because there's a lot of hungry young kids on this roster that wants his spot, but I guarantee you're going to come into camp shape. Now, and I hope Daquan does, because I'm still one of those guys that believes he has above average talent in this league, but Daquan Bowers has got to decide if he's going to be the guy that wants to, you know, be a, you know, here's something, and I'm kind of getting off topic, but here's a little dirt from the previous administration, and you can figure out who I'm talking about if you want. But the implication on Daquan, or whatever you want to call it, was he loves Sundays. You know, he loves to be that Sunday guy. And in college, he loved to be that Saturday afternoon guy. But you know what, Derek, in this league, it's the other 6 days that make a difference. And there's a reason number 50 was playing over Daquan Bowers last year. It certainly was not because Stan Nysom was a more talented football player, but he was a guy that did the 6 days, not just waiting on Sundays. So Daquan Bowers has got to decide if he's ready to do that. And the crazy thing is, I remember I don't remember if it was during last season or even minicamp this year, but he said that. He said those words. He says, you know, a superstar in college is an average NFL player. To be an elite player in the NFL, you got to put in elite work. And the thing is, I don't know that anybody's seen him do that. And I think that's what the coaching staff would love to see him do. Not come into camp with TMZ headlines, but come into camp ready to go. And we see players on Twitter, and this isn't to say Daquan isn't doing it, but we see players like Adrian Claiborne. We see people like Mason Foster, Austin Seferian Jenkins, Mike Evans, who have spent the last 6 weeks working out and, you know, training and getting ready for this camp. I don't know that I've seen many Daquan tweets about anything other than, you know, hanging with my boys, you know, I'm at the buffet, whatever it is. And again, I'm not knocking Daquan. I'm one of those guys that still believes he has a ton of talent and can contribute to this football team. But a lot of it's going to be based on, I think, in my opinion, what he does in that conditioning test tomorrow. Or if they run it Friday morning, whatever it is, I would imagine that's tomorrow.
Yeah, if they did it Friday morning, then the practice that day is going to be a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, it would be kind of rough.
But no, I did see, it's funny because you said, you made a comment about his tweets. There was a tweet the other day that caught me off guard, and the reason it caught me off guard, because he was actually thanking his trainer for getting him right. And I can't remember when it was. Calico Jack may remember. He seems to remember a lot of tweets. But, you know, talent is not enough. And we've said this a billion times. It doesn't matter that you were the talented guy at insert school here. Everyone you're going to face was that guy.
Right.
Right? And if they definitely want to if he wants to have a spot on this team, he's going to have to step his game up. Because, like you said, there's a lot of hungry guys, especially at that position.
And they've looked at the film, too. I mean, this isn't just, you know, what they saw during OTAs when he was on his knee and letting other guys go ahead of him taking reps. I mean, they've seen the film of the last 3 years. They've seen Daquan Bowers with 5.5 career sacks in 3 seasons. They see a guy last year that had 7 tackles and 1 sack. And as a second-round draft pick coming out of college with the awards and things that he won and the accolades, that's just not enough.
Well, we'll see. I think the defensive line, just like the offensive line, is going to be interesting. I think they'll be interesting for different reasons, right? I think there's so many questions at the offensive line. And I did actually go back and listen to your interview today on 98.7 Fan Interference with Justin Pawlowski. Good job, as always. It sounds like you're going to be on there every day at 10, or every Wednesday at 10:20, right?
Yep, that's the schedule. Sure is.
All right, so 10:20 Wednesdays on 98.7 The Fan. You guys remember them as 10:10. They haven't been 10:10 for like 2 years now, but they are 98.7 The Fan. And Justin does a great job, as always. He'll have Mark Cook on there in the mornings. Now, what is it that the Pewter Report squad does to prep for training camp? What are you doing? Are you hydrating? Are you stretching? What's going on out there, Mark? Because I know that back when Charlie used to work with you guys, he had the big old coach's hat and the chair he carried around and a camelback and the whole nine yards. What are you guys doing to get ready for camp?
I have been sucking up absolutely the most air conditioning I possibly can over the last 2 weeks, trying to stay under 80 degrees at all times because we know come Friday it's going to be hot. Now, a lot of people are questioning Lovie Smith's decision for these 4:30 practices, and yes, I do believe more than one of these practices will end up being canceled, delayed, rained out, whatever you want to call it, based on the weather. But I'll be honest with you. It's going to be a little cooler, especially if some of those showers get through or it's kind of overcast. I think it's going to be a little bit better for everybody than the 8:30 or 8:45 Greg Schiano practices for sure. But as far as me, I'm just trying to get mentally prepared. Physically, it's over. I'm way past that. I'll never be physically prepared for these things.
Now, I know that you and I have spoken a lot more this season than we have in the past. I mean, we have it's, for those of you who don't know the way that it works, every once in a while the old boys club lets me into the press area, and then I get to see what the real guys do. There's a room back there that all the guys have access to the internet. They can set their stuff up. They can write their stories. They can do all the important stuff that journalists have to do, and that's really important. That's also an area back where the press conferences and such happen. Everything goes on back there. Now, the press comes out there and does their work, and we would chat, you know, from time to time, you and I and Scott and some of the guys from Joe Buck's Fan and Rick, and it's a nice little fraternity back there, but we didn't get to talk about what you look for. And this year I've heard you talking a lot about a thing that I love to do before, which is always go watch the fat guys, not because I have any sort of predilection towards fat guys, but because they're so damn important, and I've heard you talk about it a lot this offseason. Can you tell us what you're expecting out of Carl Nix since he's been cleared to play and whether you see Carl Nix fitting into this team? And at the end of this broadcast, by the way, I've got a couple of buying and sellings and over and unders like we did before that relate to this.
Well, you know, Carl Nix, he passed his physical, according to Lovie Smith, during the last OTA. Now, I imagine that's going to be part of tomorrow, again, more physicals. He has been cleared to resume football activity by the medical staff. Now, I don't necessarily think, and I heard some sound bites from Jason Light earlier today. He was on 620, and he said they're going to be prudent and they're going to be smart in this. I don't think anybody should go out and expect to see number 77 dressed out in uniform hitting anybody on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, any of those days. I think they're going to take things slow. I think he's going to be spending some time on the bike and things like that. Jason did say he's lost some weight. He's in better shape. But I think they know what Carl Nix is capable of when healthy, even if he's only 80% healthy for the rest of his career or even 75%. They kind of know what they have in Carl Nix. I don't know that you go out there and rush it because – let's face it, if this doesn't work out, Carl Nix's career is over with. I mean, I just don't see him, you know, in another year or two coming back with another team and trying to play football. I think he's going to take his injury settlement and relax and do what he wants to do. And so for the Buccaneers, they're on the hook for a ton of money regardless, whether they end up with an injury settlement out of this or whether they, you know, whether he ends up playing and being on the roster and they pay him for a full 16 games. It's within $1.5 million either way. So, you know, they're going to do whatever they can to try and get him on the football field. And Carl Nix, I honestly believe, and there's some skepticism from some fans, but I honestly believe Carl Nix wants to play football. I think he enjoys playing football. I think he feels like he has a lot to prove based on the amount of money that he signed for. I think the MRSA thing, which was not his fault by any stretch of the imagination, you know, was a bad deal. He knew his foot was going to hurt the rest of his life after the toe injury. I mean, it was a gruesome injury. You can go and Google and look up some things, and this isn't a typical, I got a turf toe. It's completely different. And so he was going to have pain regardless. Then you add in the MRSA and the fact that they've got to go there and dig into the bone and different things. You know, it's going to be difficult for him to recover and play anywhere near the capability that he used to. But as Lovie said, a 75 or 80% Carl Nix is better than a lot of guards in this league, and I would say better than any guard on the roster currently. So I think they're going to take it very, very slow. I'm going to look and listen to Jason's full meeting as soon as we hang up. I just realized that was I didn't hear it live, and I was looking through Twitter and pulled up some things and saw some quotes and listen to a couple sound bites. So I think they're going to, you know, I think they're going to take it slow with Carl, and I think that's the smart move. I mean, you know, they did that with Davin last year. They did it. Look, they had a handful of guys. They had Revis, they had Davin, they had Adrian Claiborne. Claiborne was the only guy who came out from day one, and this is another reason I love Adrian Claiborne. All right, he had the same injury Darrell Revis had. Right, he had you know a severe injury similar to what Davin had. And yet he came out and he suffered his injury the same week that Darrell Revis did. Davin actually, his injury happened in the preseason before AC's injury. And yet he was out there. He didn't miss a snap. I mean, in training camp, I mean, he was out there. He was in there during the preseason, and he was really a warrior. And again, different people heal different ways. But I think a lot of it is a mindset, too. And Adrian Claiborne wanted to play football last year. Nothing was going to stop him. And that's why I think that people who maybe have written him off because the Buccaneers didn't pick up that fifth-year option, I think they're foolish. Or people who say he's not going to be able to rush the passer from the left side. Because if I'm not mistaken, I think 3 of his 5 sacks came from the left side. So Adrian Claiborne is one of my favorite guys on this team. He's got a motor that doesn't quit. He's a great guy. And I don't know that anybody works harder in that locker room than AC does. But, you know, to me, what he was able to do to come out from day one of training camp last year and not be slowed down by the injury was really amazing. And for him to play as well as he did, finishing second on the team, I think with 19 tackles for a loss last year, again, less than 1 year after having major reconstructive knee surgery on that ACL. So, you know, AC is a guy that, you know, was the exception to the rules. But I suspect it would be more along the lines of what they did with Darrell Revis last year, where, you know, he didn't play in the preseason any, limited work on the field, and just kind of take it slow and see where he is. Because if they can get him in cardiovascular shape, which is going to be tough, you know what I mean, and I think that, you know, that's going to be a big plus for him being able to potentially start the season. And just to wrap it up quickly on this point, very likely he could end up on the PUP list to start the season, too. That's another option that the Buccaneers have with Adrian. I mean, I'm sorry, with Carl.
With Carl, yeah, that'll buy him some time. It's going to be interesting. I, of course, am biased. I appreciate hearing good things about AC because I think the world of the kid. I liked him since I met him coming out of college.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I don't know a lot of fans get a chance to see that we do see because we're here locally, Mark, and you see even more than others, and I saw in Scott's article on what to look for in training camp, talking about Mason Foster being in great shape. Now, I haven't seen Mason since AC's brachial plexus event that we did with him over in Tampa.
Right.
But I've seen Adrian, and Adrian's in ridiculous shape. They've got a bunch of these guys are on a new diet that essentially mm-hmm. works on all sorts of blood chemistry to make sure that they're eating the right foods for their diet, and they're being judged in that regard, not on just weight, or just on, you know, one or two little characteristics. It's about muscle fat percentage and their targets based on their position and what they need to do. It is a very
right.
detailed process. Have you seen Mason, some of the other guys, and the effects that maybe these things have had on him? Because AC looks ready to go.
Well, and he did, you know, during those mini camps. And see, we haven't seen these guys since June 10th, so you may have seen Mason since I have. In fact, I believe it was maybe a week or two after that AC had his event. But Mason looked really good physical-wise. Now, just give you a setup of the OTAs. The linebackers tended to practice more in the middle of the middle fields, which probably gave us the best viewing possibilities of all of the positions. I spent a lot of time with the offensive line because they were in the far east side of the field, and we did have access this year to the sidelines. Not in the middle parts of the sidelines, but around the entire perimeter, which we didn't used to have with Greg Schiano. Lovey's opened that up for us. And this is during OTAs, during training camp, of mm-hmm. course. You know, we know how it's set up in a U-shape where you can move around. But I will say, you know, Adrian Claiborne, there was no question this guy's in tremendous physical shape compared to last year. Again, last year rehabbing an ACL, you know, it's tough to, you know, be at the targeted weight that you want to be, and there's a lot of lower body exercises that he couldn't do and things like that. But he looks a lot slimmer and a lot more ripped this year and really looks like an animal beating on those pads. And, again, I spent a lot of time. If you picture the patio of the Buccaneer, the back patio, which you've been on, go exactly straight across the field on the middle field. That's where the defensive linemen worked almost exclusively during the OTAs and the mini camps.
Right.
And so I went over there just because the access was so good. Plus, I kind of wanted to see some of these young kids like Euclid Cummings and Chaz Sutton and some of these other guys. So what I'm saying is it was tough to really see linebackers doing individuals because they tended to be more in the middle part of the middle fields.
Right.
So I didn't really see them up close and personal. But, look, you can tell from Mason if you follow the guy on Twitter. I mean, he's been putting in the work. And you know what? He needs to. This is a contract year for him. He understands that, and that's something that he and I have talked about. You know, and same thing with Adrian. You know, Adrian's not as disappointed as some might make it out, that they didn't pick up that fifth-year option. To me, if I'm a player, I almost don't want them to pick up that fifth-year option, because now I have an opportunity to go out and I don't know, double. I'm not sure what his number is. I haven't looked at it in a while. But, earn considerably more as a free agent when the season ends. If he goes out and has 12 sacks, the Buccaneers are going to wish they would have picked up that fifth-year option, in other words. So it's motivation for both of those guys right now. Again, just to briefly tell people, and 99% of your audience already knows this, Derek, but starting with the 2011 collective bargaining agreement, the 4 years is the max contract rookies can sign, but first rounders are allowed to. The team can pick up a fifth year option. That's one reason why Mark Dominic. Here's a little bit of scoop for you. You guys may have already figured this out. One of the reasons the Buccaneers moved up and got Doug Martin late in the first round. He may have been there in the second round, although I believe the Giants would have taken him over David Wilson with the 32nd pick. But one of the reasons why they wanted to go up and get him in the first round is that gave the team that fifth-year option in case, they wanted. Just gives them an extra card in the hand to deal or to play with.
Right.
So, again, Mason and Adrian, both of them have an opportunity to earn a lot of money in this year right here, and both of them seem really motivated to do that.
I'm trying to verify something I just heard from Spent in the chat room. You know that we got pretty good relationships with some of the guys and even some of their parents. Allegedly, Mason weighed in today at 233, which is 9 pounds less than he played at last year, which doesn't sound like a lot to some guys for a guy who's almost 250 pounds, but based on the way this diet works that I've seen them on, that's not just 9 pounds, right? That's an alternative body style.
Well, look, Derek, I tell people say all the time, okay, and our doctors tell us all the time, if I lose 50 pounds, that's like me not carrying a sack of cow feed on my back everywhere I go, okay? Mason Foster is now chasing down running backs or dropping back into coverage, not holding 2 5-pound bags of sugar, if that makes any sense at all. So, just think about it in that perspective. Think about you out in the yard playing with your son, chasing that brand new puppy dog you got. Huh? Now let's throw 2 5-pound bags of sugar on your back and you doing it. I mean, it is a huge difference. I mean, a few pounds can make a lot of difference in what these guys do. And if there's one thing that I think Mason needed to work on, and I think the one question people had is how he's going to fit into the Tampa 2 defense, where he's going to be required to take deeper drops and cover the middle of the field. Having 9 less pounds and redirecting that into more muscle, I think, is going to be beneficial for him and crucial for him to be successful as a middle linebacker in this Tampa 2.
I thoroughly agree with you. And for, again, people that are listening to this later, this is Mark Cook from Pewter Report, editor-in-chief, not editor-and-chief, as
right.
Some people incorrectly say. And we want to make sure you get that right, because if you're writing this shit down, I want it to be accurate. But as we just spoke about the speed on the defense, there have been a couple of cautionary tales that have come out from guys that carry a lot of weight in this world. Derek Brooks being one of them, Booger McFarland being another one, almost pumping the brakes. And for the folks in the chat room who have asked some questions, Jessica, I'll get your question in there and I'll also get Kurt's question as well. But I want to follow this up with some pumping of the brakes of guys, listen, don't drink the Kool-Aid this fast, right? It took a while for our defense to get to become our defense, because this system, and we'll simplify it down to just say that Lovie's system is going to be close enough to what we ran back in the Dungy era that we can call them an analog, right?
Right.
It requires a tremendous amount of discipline. That was the biggest thing about that defense, was it wasn't particularly complicated necessarily.
Right.
But you had to do your job. Don't do your neighbor's job. Don't worry about freelancing. Do your job. Everyone has to do their job on every play, or everyone looks like a bunch of idiots.
Yeah.
Now, what are your thoughts about that, Mark? Because these are some guys who played the system. They know the system. They're good journalists in their own right, and in some cases, professional evaluators of talent, in Derek Brooks' case.
Well, I mean, all you have to do is go back to Tony's first year when this team started out 0-5 and finished 6-10. Now, they won 3 of their last 5 football games, and they're playing much better football towards the end of the year because things started to click. And as you know, with your son and with the guys that you've coached in high school and the people you've helped develop over in England, until it clicks, you're not playing on instinct. You're playing using your head. And of course, you got to be smart. I'm not saying don't be smart. But everything's got to be second nature to you. And again, anytime you implement a new defense, there's going to be an adjustment period. There's enough talent on this defense, in my opinion. I think they should be a top 15 defense. I really do. I don't think there's any reason. If they were number 17 last year, I think in this system, they're going to be a top 15 defense, potentially a top 10 defense, depending on how soon it clicks. They're not going to, they're not even going to be the 2008 defense, that defense that collapsed as we saw losing, what, their last five games and missing out on the playoffs. Gruden gets fired. Brooks gets cut. People have to remember that was still, they finished that year, they were still a top 10 NFL defense.
Oh, yeah.
Even at their 9-7 record or whatever it was, and they missed out on the playoffs. So, you know, Derek is making a lot of sense, and Booger does too. It really does. But I will say this. I will say, as structured as this defense is and as disciplined as it has to be, I think last year's defense was required more cerebral thinking. I think it required even more discipline because it wasn't a one-gap defense, okay? It wasn't, this is your area, you know, go tackle the running back on the way to sack the passer kind of a mentality that I think fits this style, this personnel in this field now better. Or much better, or more better, or whatever I screwed
more,
up last
more
time
betterer.
I was on the show.
Right,
more betterer. you know, I Greg Shannon's defense was a very, and I'm not knocking it, if it worked, and we saw it in a few games where everybody was on the same page and everybody did well, it looked tremendous, all right? Let's go to the Atlanta game. Let's go to the Buffalo game. You know, there were even that second game of the season against the Saints. I mean, the defense was working really, really well until that final really bad breakdown. I mean, there were a couple deep passes to Graham in the first half and, of course, the long pass that got him into the little range for him to win the game late. But when the defense was on the same page, it was a pretty good defense. That defense was very complicated. And players that I've talked to since then are relieved that this defense isn't going to require as much thinking, if that makes sense. Now, but discipline is still going to need to be there because you can't, I mean, it's just, let's just take a simplistic thing and take Mason Foster in the middle again, all right? If he bites on that play fake, if he's not disciplined enough to read his key and he really bites on a hard play fake, which Drew Brees is really good at, and some of these other NFC South quarterbacks, and he gets sucked up, there's going to be a big hole in the middle of that field where a guy like Brees and Ryan are going to complete passes. So, they still do have to be very disciplined. In the cover two, and this is something the Buccaneers did run some last year, and Revis was not very good at it. I was able to see some stuff behind the scenes with a little bit of film study from some people, and they showed us a game. I think it was the second Carolina. It was the second Carolina game at Carolina where Darrell Revis, as good as he was last year, played poorly when they were in cover two. Part of the reason is because at some point in cover two as a cornerback, you have to release your man, and then your responsibility comes anything coming across the middle, whether it be a tight end dragging or a wide receiver or whatever, a running back coming out of the flat. Darrell tended to want to hold onto that receiver a little bit too long and not release that guy. There's going to be some of these cornerbacks that are also going to suffer from that because they're not used to doing that. You know, Greg Schiano's defense was you're playing the receiver, you're anticipating the receiver, you're watching the receiver. Lovie Smith's defense is more about kind of keeping an eye on the quarterback and adjusting to what the quarterback's doing as opposed to the receiver a little bit more, if that makes sense.
It does.
So, you know, a guy like Darrell Revis struggled in when the Buccaneers were in cover two last year. And, you know, there are going to be some of these cornerbacks that are so used to, you know, playing man that they are going to struggle a little bit. Now, the good news is you've got a guy like Altron Werner who I think is the perfect fit for a cover two type defense and has experience in it. So I don't think he's going to be one that'll have some issues, but maybe a guy like Jonathan Banks will struggle a little bit. Leonard Johnson, if he ends up in the nickel slot position or Mike Jenkins, whoever it may be. I think Jenkins has a little bit more experience in the cover two, so he may be okay. But you understand what I'm saying? I mean, there's going to be, you know, I'm going to go out and say this, and I may be wrong, but I'm going to say Greg Schiano's defense was more complicated than what they're going to be doing now. But there's still going to be a huge adjustment from going from that extremely complicated defense to one where, yes, they're going to have to be very disciplined, but it's not going to be the good news about the cover two, here's the easy way to break it down. If one guy screws up, there's still an opportunity for 10 guys to make a play. Unfortunately, in Greg Schiano's defense and Bill Sheridan's defense, a lot of times if one or two guys were out of position, it's a completely busted play. And we saw that with some passes that were completed. Just go back to that last New Orleans game where there were some bad calls in the defensive secondary. There were some busts. That New Orleans game I mentioned, second game of the year, there were some busts. And a lot of that was just based on guys not being on the same page. So I think there's room to cover up errors in this defense a little bit more. But, yes, I'm completely in agreement with Booger and Derek Brooks that don't expect this team to be the 2002 Buccaneer defense coming out of the gate. That's just too much to ask of these guys right out of the bat.
Well, and I don't think that anyone really expects that to be the case. But, yeah, it's interesting because when you talk to the players, and I'm sure you talked even more than I do, it's almost I've seen the same glimmer in their eye when you say, hey, how's the defense feel, right? What do you guys think about it? They all give you this kind of smile like they're happy. Now, most of the guys I talk to are front seven guys, right? So, of course, they're going to be happy, right? Because there was a quote somewhere, I may be able to find it, that I think it was Rondé talked about, cover two doesn't work when you're doing five Mississippis. Right? Cover two works great when you do two and a half Mississippis.
Right.
Because you can really screw with people because you can jump into zones, you can jump into the passing routes, you can do all sorts of really great things and cause turnovers and wreak havoc if you can create pressure with your front four and with your blitz if you choose to implement a blitz. But I understand and I appreciate you going into the details of the difference between playing man and zone. I like to believe, though it may be incorrect, that at the pro level these guys should have played enough of both of those systems that with good tutelage they should be able to become proficient at either. Now, I think it's interesting with a guy like Darrell Revis, who is such a guy who loves to be a lockdown corner, like, there's probably resistance. It's not intellectual. It's not athletic. It's none of those things. It's just he's really fucking good at the other one, and he's used to doing it all the time.
Right. That's what Rex Ryan had that guy doing his entire career. I mean, very, very rarely was he asked to play zone. He was the matchup man guy. So it was very difficult for him to change, just as it's very difficult for a guy like Deshaun Golson to quit headhunting all of a sudden, something he's done his whole life.
Well, and Deshaun's going to be a lightning rod, right? As soon as he gets the first penalty this year, you'll have all the people coming out. There's already been people tearing him apart with it for his coverage and the mistakes. I am really intrigued to find out what that secondary looks like because talent on paper, they've got a lot. Right, it's going to be very interesting to see what they can do. And I remember back in the old days of training camp over at Disney, being able to watch Coach Raheem Morris work with the secondary, and it was watching a clinic. Right, he was, and I know people have thrown him under the bus for the things he's done as a head coach, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Not the point. As a secondary coach, when he was in his prime back then, doing his job, the guy was a surgeon. Right, he paid attention to freaking everything.
Right,
and we need that kind of detail. Now,
but let me stop you right there.
Yeah,
and here's a big plus for the Buccaneers. During their heyday in this cover two, you had Herm Edwards and Mike Tomlin running that secondary. Right, you've got a guy I think that's just as talented, maybe even more so, because he spent a lot of years playing it at a high level. And Gil Bird is coaching these cornerbacks, and I think I don't think that can be underestimated how important it is to have a guy like Gil Bird working with these guys. He is going to be a huge asset to the secondary, and you're right. It's going to take some adjustments. Some of these guys are going to have to get used to it, but you're right. They've all played it. I mean, they all understand the basic concepts of it. Now and I'll say this, watching Gil in practice, there's not a play that happens that he's not coaching up a guy, whether it's an interception on the play, whether the guy gets burned for a touchdown. Gil Bird is telling him what they could have done better, and I think fans will enjoy watching Coach Bird work with these secondary. You know, you always... 2 years ago with P.J. Fleck, everybody loved watching work with guys. I don't know if there was an assistant last year that people got very excited about. But
nope.
But people will be excited when they get to watch Gil Bird. Very vocal, very animated, and very hands-on teacher. And I think that's important for the secondary. It'll make them better faster.
Well, there's plenty of excitement we can see. We had a couple of questions that came in from the chat room. One of them from Jessica. Jessica wants to know how the hell you're going to do all this work in training camp, write all the articles that you're forced to work on by your abusive leader, Scott Reynolds. I tease. He's not abusive. And do all the things that Peter Report has to do and launch a new website. How's the new website coming? I hear that the new logo was unveiled at Keel and Curley the other night. How are things coming on the retrofit?
Well, Scott and I, we talk about it on a daily basis. It's going to require a lot of extra hours and manpower. One thing we've done is we've brought aboard somebody that was really good with us in 2011. Eric Horchie will be back helping us during the season. Is that third, beat rider, which will be beneficial. We've got a big crop of interns that we're working with now, getting them prepared. And so it's just going to be extra manpower. I don't know, where sleep will come, but we'll figure out a way to get it done. And there's some things that we can prep and kind of get ready now so that when the launch is unveiled, the website will be full. Because, anytime you change anything and you add some new features and things like that, you got to have content when it happens. And so that's something that we've started working on right now. I think the web design is right on schedule to be unveiled before week one. But as I've said and I've cautioned everybody before, if we don't feel 100% comfortable, it might be week two. We're not going to roll out the product that really, there's going to be bugs in anything when you unveil anything new, but we want to lessen those as much as we can. But we'll figure out a way to get it done. I don't want to overthink about it right now because, like you say, there's going to be a ton of work to do before then. But we'll figure out a way, Jess.
All right. Well, then you're saying relax, Jessica. It'll be all fine, right? I apologize. Someone in the chat room just said you didn't unveil the new logo. I thought you had it, Curly. I apologize.
No, we didn't unveil it. And we mentioned that we did have it. The actual person who designed the new logo was actually there. But no, we didn't unveil it yet. That's going to be happening. We're actually putting together a launch party. We'll have more details on that in the future. Scott's working on securing a location for that, and we're going to make a big shindig out of it when we do a launch party and have advertisers and readers and different people show up, and I think it'll be a good time.
That sounds like a good time, my friend. All right, the other question we had was from Kurt McDonald. From, I don't know, Australia or New Zealand.
Throw another shrimp on the Barbie, mate.
Exactly.
That joke ever going to get too played out?
Never. And I made the comment that it's cheap to fly to Florida. He's like, not for me. I'm like, you live in the middle of fucking nowhere. It's not cheap for you to fly anywhere.
Exactly. You can't. Yeah, I mean, in Australia is as big as the United States times three. I mean, you know, if he flies coast to coast, I mean, it's like a 9-day trip on an airplane.
It's that size, but there's only 36 people that live there, so it doesn't really matter.
That's 43. They just found a few more Aborigines.
Nice. His question was actually about the offensive line newcomers. There was a lot of discussion about some of these guys. There's a lot of people that seem pretty excited about some of the new guys. What have you seen out of the new guys so far in the OTAs? Who are you looking to maybe raise some eyebrows come training camp time in the offensive line? And they don't have to be the guards necessarily, but...
I'll say this. You know, trying to watch offensive linemen during mini camps and OTAs, you might as well be watching paint dry. Because it's a lot of, you know, one-on-one teaching periods. They can't hit anybody. They can't really show what they can do other than do they know their assignments. So anybody who thinks they've been able to garner any inside scoop or have any idea what's going to happen by watching them in shorts and not hitting anybody is wrong. You just can't do it. You know, and I know that, you know, offensive linemen are built, born, and bred in the dirt, and, you know, hand-to-hand combat and getting physical and snot bubbles in the whole nine yards. It's one reason why I'm going to be paying a lot of attention to the offensive line during training camp is because of the fact that, you know, that's when we're going to see guys emerge. We're going to see guys step up. We're going to see a guy like DeMar Dotson a few years ago that a lot of people didn't know about and who I think is one of the best right tackles in the league right now. You know, there's going to be guys that aren't household names right now that may emerge out of this group. You know, one of them I've talked up a lot, quite a bit, is Patrick Omome, a former Michigan player, a guy who was, if you go back and look at him out of college, he was the least recruited or highly, you know, I mean, he might have been a 3-star, maybe a 2-star guy. How he made it on to scholarship at Michigan is beyond a lot of people's, you know, wonder. But the guy, all he did was spend 4 years working hard, and he actually got in pretty early in his career and never gave up that spot and ended up, you know, being an all-conference guy. I love the guy's attitude. You know, a lot of times you can meet a person, talk to them, and you just get this vibe that, you know, football is what they're all about. And Patrick's one of those guys that, you know, his entire goal in life is to start and play well in the NFL. It's not, you know, hanging out, partying. It's not, you know, making the TMZ headlines. It's not, you know, having a caveman gang or any of this nonsense. It's about football. You know, and he's got a little bit of a nasty streak. He's a scary dude, man. You don't want to mess with this guy, right? But he's the nicest guy in the world when you talk to him one-on-one. But, you know, I think this guy, you know, has the potential to earn a spot in the starting lineup. I really do, particularly if Nix isn't able to start the season playing. And, you know, I may be wrong. They could cut the guy tomorrow. I mean, the last thing I thought was going to happen was DJ Moore. In fact, he would have been my pick. End up starting in that nickel slot position because he got the most reps at that position really during the OTAs and training camp, and they ended up releasing the guy today. So, you know, trying to figure out what these coaches are doing is virtually impossible, and us not having any access over the last 6 weeks doesn't help. But, you know, but he's the guy to keep an eye on, really, on the offensive line. Interesting to see what Collins is about. Here's a guy who hasn't started a ton of games in the league, but when he has, he's played really well. And again, he says all the right things. I mean, he said it in his initial press conference. You know, Josh McCown's got 4 mouths to feed in his family. I got to take care of him. That's my job, is to keep him upright and playing football. And I love what he has to say. And it's not a lot, but what he has to say, you know, is pretty impactful. So I like Collins a lot. Dietrich Smith seems to be that kind of that cerebral offensive lineman, a smart guy. A guy that you know, brings, you know, and everybody says, well, he's a better pass blocker than run blocker, and that kind of pisses him off. He doesn't like to hear that. We asked him about that during one of the OTAs, and he's, you know, as every player, he likes to say he's well-rounded, but we'll see. You know, again, you won't tell any of this until they can get out on the field and they can start hitting each other. And, of course, mine and your favorite thing to watch is the O-line, D-line, one-on-one battles. My favorite thing. I love it. I won't miss a single one of them because I love watching it that much. That's what excites me, and that's something that we saw out of DeMar Dotson 2 years ago during training camp. I said, this guy can play left tackle if he has to, and you know, but he just was a tactician with his hands and with his footwork, and rarely got beat over the last 2 years during these things. Occasionally he does, but every offensive lineman does. You know, but you know, I expect some guys to spring out of the shadows, and our guy Fish will love this, but who is it? Matt Patchen from the Florida, a guy who's been shot, motorcycle wrecked, you know, knee surgeries, transferred up to Boston College, is a big guy, and I will say, if you can get anything out of OTAs, he was a guy that kind of stood out to me as far as being a big physical guy. Gets his hands on the player. Now, again, it wasn't actually a player. It was pads that the coaches were holding. But really gets his hands on there and seems to be kind of a mauler at that tackle position. So he's the guy that was an undrafted free agent that I really think could stick with this football team. He's the guy to keep an eye out on, too.
Now, it's interesting. When you talked about Patamame, I went out and looked because I didn't have the background right. So originally, this is a defensive end who switched over, and that's when his stock started to rise. But he's a 4.0-plus GPA coming out of high school and a 28 on the ACT, and I'm still young enough to remember that 36 is the max, or it was back then.
Right.
This is a smart kid. Now, that shouldn't surprise any of us because offensive line follows only quarterback in Wunderlich scores, but it's good to have intellect on that line as well as that span. You need the hands out there. Like you said, a really important thing is about hands. When we're out there watching those drills, that's what we'll be talking about. I know I will, and I assume Mark will in his articles, mm-hmm. talking about how they control the point of contact. So, okay, let's get to buying and selling real quick and then let you go get some more air conditioning soaked up and do some more yoga or whatever it is you're doing.
Yeah, I got to finish watching MasterChef from last night, by the way. Go ahead.
Master whatever. Carl Nix plays on opening week. You buying or selling?
I'm selling.
Okay. Over under number of games he actually plays this season, the number is 9.
I'm going 6, so whatever that is, I'm selling. I don't know. I don't know if I'm playing this right or not.
You are. What's funny is I actually had thought about the pup list thing as well, so I put it at 9 so they would screw someone who wanted to go with 10. So that's fine. And then my last one actually is, and this was from Jason Light today on the 620 interview. Do the Bucs actually keep 5 running backs?
Yes.
What?
Yes.
5 run? Okay, seriously.
Are we including the fullback in this?
No.
No. Okay, well.
No.
Oh, boy. You know, I would tend to sell then if we're not talking about a fullback as part of the running back group. I don't know, man. I mean, it's gonna be tough to get rid of some of these guys. I mean, there's some talent there at that position. It's really well stocked. I mean, you know, even the kid that they signed out of Cal. I mean, who looks pretty good. Gosh, what is his name? Is it Bigelow? You know, a blazing fast
Deuce.
Guy. I mean, there's a lot of talent now. You know, some of these guys are eligible for the practice squad, and not many on the running back roster. Actually, Bigelow would be, but. I don't know, man. It would be shocking if they kept 5 because that would be hard because that if you do that, then you've got to almost keep one less wide receiver. So, and this receiver grouping and what we've seen from the OTAs, I can't imagine them cutting one of the wide receiver positions for an extra running back.
I don't know though. Chris Sims apparently in an interview said that that Sims, the running back, may be the best wide receiver on the team.
Look, you got a guy who can't catch a football and catch football well, but, you know, and you take a guy like Jeff Demps, too. I mean, maybe he feels – I mean, what these guys do on special teams is going to be huge, too, because, again, like Demps may make the team as the primary kick and punt returner, but he's technically listed as a running back, too. But if he makes the team, he's going to be in the backfield, too. I mean, they're not going to put, you know, Olympic speed on the bench or strictly just to return kicks, I don't think, because – when we watched him in OTAs and the different workouts and mini camps, I mean, it looked like he had a pretty good package of plays designed for him. So It'd be hard to just stash him away. I don't think that they stash him away.
I tell you, if they don't get him a lot of playing time in preseason and make sure he can take a hit, then they're absolutely out of their freaking trees.
See, I don't think there's a problem with this guy taking a hit. He's played football his whole life. There's not a problem with him taking a hit. Warrick Dunn was smaller than well,
nothing to do with his size.
Same size. But my question is football versus track shape, the hamstrings, you know what I mean, the structural makeup of his body and those things that – that's the thing that worries me. I mean, he's going to be – look, the guy's got zero body fat, right? I mean, these are the guys that tend to cramp, tend to pull hamstrings, things like that. So that concerns me a little bit more than him taking a hit. Yeah, I think he can get drilled all day long and bounce back, but I don't think that's the problem. I think just the I'm using the wrong words again, I'm sure, but the physiology of his body and the – you know, and those kind of things, his conditioning from track to conditioning his body to play football is the big question, more so than can he absorb a hit.
All right. Well, we'll see. We'll see, right? My intuition is that taking hits a problem, and if his physiology is a problem, then they should have worked on that in the off season.
Well, and I think they have because, you know, I believe that he's concentrated solely on football. I don't think he's got any track plans right out of the gate. I mean, last year, he got off of a plane from Russia or wherever he was at. I don't know. Okay, maybe it was London. I can't remember where he was last year at this time.
Russia,
but,
London. Who's keeping track?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those faraway countries with a bunch of crazy people running it, you know. Australia, maybe, New Zealand. I don't know where he was. But the bottom line is you know, he got off a plane and showed up at camp, and he certainly wasn't prepared to be a football player. So, yeah, they've spent a lot of time getting his body ready and conditioned, I think, for football. I don't think that's an issue. I think it's a matter of, you know, can he help this football team, and does he fit in the system well enough over some of these other guys?
All right. Well, we'll see. We'll see how that works out. Mark, I want to thank you for joining the show. This was Mark Cook from Pewter Report, our editor-in-chief at Pewter Report. We'll be releasing our schedule for our joint podcast, which will be getting kicked off here in August as well. Want to remind you, Mark, of course, your VIP invite to our Back to the Future party August 9th. We'll get you more information about that. I know that's the day after the Jaguars, which means you probably have to write about 63 articles.
God, I hope not. Writing preseason articles makes me want to pull my hair out. I mean, it's not quite as tough as writing, rookie minicamp reports, but, yeah, preseason games, they're a little frustrating. But I think I should be able to make it out there for that.
Well, we will certainly give you all the information. It's set up to be a great event. But I want to thank you again for coming on. Look forward to talking to you more, and I look forward to seeing you out there on Friday. I'm not sure whether I'll be with you or with another section or in the stands at this point, but I'll be out there one way or the other.
I'll hang an intern tag over you. You can hang out with us.
Oh, I'd always wanted to be your intern.
All right, Lewinsky.
Take care, brother.
See you, buddy.
Bye. I think he just called me Lewinsky. That makes me very, very uncomfortable. But thanks to Mark Cook at the Pewter Report. I want to thank you guys for tuning into What the Buck tonight. We'll recap a couple things, and then I'm going to get out of here and put this podcast up so you guys can listen to it. I want to let you guys know what we're doing during training camp to keep you guys abreasted, as my man used to say. We will be doing reports from every training camp session. Animal in the chat room asked what the Buck schedule is going to be like during the year. We will have one live event like this during the week, and it will be on Wednesdays. We will also do a YouTube video, which will embed on the site just like a podcast. We'll do an audio version as well, which will be non-interactive, just because life is getting too complicated with the two kids and all the stuff going on. So we will have only the one show, plus the Pewter Report live show, and then any live events that we do, et cetera, et cetera. But we will be back at getting onto YouTube and doing some of those things as well. Definitely interested in working with anyone who wants to do some writing for us, as well as some folks who maybe want to come on the show from time to time. It's great to hear the people learning more and more about the game and getting involved in it. Reminders, meet and greet, Friday, 4:30 is practice. Afterwards, we expect it to be about 7 o'clock at the Wing House at 8001 West Hillsborough Avenue. Is there such a thing as an interactive YouTube video? No, that's why I said it's not as interactive, because it's on YouTube. Though you could say that the comment section is interactive, Gore. But the actual video itself is probably not so much. It's a broadcast, as it were. And if it's called porn, then it would be X-Tube, Kurt. And porn here in the States does not involve sheep, just to make sure we get that clear, Kurt. Well, it might. I don't know. But not normally, I guess. So the meet and greet should be a good time. If you're coming, the event's on Facebook. Let us know you're coming. We'd love to have you out there. I think there's going to be some great specials as part of the sponsorship package. As those become more public, we'll let you guys know about them. But it'll be a great time to get together with some other Bucks fans and have a good time. I know that the people out there who are What the Buckites will be wearing their shirts. And you'll be able to notice them pretty easily. Kickoff party, August 9th. I told you before, for those of you who missed it at the beginning, This thing is going to be ridiculous. Keep your eyes peeled. It is the Back to the Future kickoff party. I don't have any new jokes. There's only three jokes about people from New Zealand. What do you want me to say? But it's going to be an amazing time. 7 o'clock till close. August 9th, Wing House 8001, West Hillsborough Avenue, Back to the Future. We will have the DeLorean. We will have Doc. We will have Marty. We will have the pirate from Crew of Blackbeard's Revenge. There will be raffles and gifts and drink specials and all sorts of craziness and hijinks and shenanigans. It will be an amazing time. So I think we've covered most of the high points. School supplies. If you're going to donate school supplies, you can bring them there. You can bring them to Elder Ford. You can bring them to the Wing House. We will make sure we collect it. We didn't talk at all about Tony Dungy in that situation. Calico, because to be honest, I think everyone's been talking about it too much. If you guys care what I think about that particular situation, I went back and I read what Tony said. Here's my stance on these things. Every once in a while, someone gets in a position where they either are asked to weigh in or choose to weigh in on almost any significant situation. With Tony, everyone's got a right to an opinion, right? I had a discussion with a very dear friend of mine about the Michael Sam situation the other day, saying, well, why is this such a big deal? I think everyone's accepted the fact that Michael's gay and that gay athletes exist. I happen to disagree vehemently. I think it's very important. I think this is my own personal belief. You're welcome not to share it, but you're also welcome to go fuck yourself if you tell me I can't share it, have my opinion. I think it's important for other homosexual athletes to know that it's okay to be who you are. I don't think that none of us lead with that. Right, when it comes to sports. Sports should be a meritocracy. It should not matter who he sleeps with or who he's married to. It should not matter. And I think if you look at what Tony said, that's what he was trying to say. But, and there was an article today that I thought was amazing, the press and the way they've covered it has pointed out exactly the point, which is that we are not over it. Right? So it sucks. It's amazing. So at any rate, we shall see. We'll see. I wish Michael Sam well. I think he would have done himself well by doing better at the combine, is what it comes down to, because if he had put up great numbers, no one would have given two shits about who he's sleeping with, and they would have drafted him anyway. Talent trumps everything, which is exactly why Tony worked with Michael Vick, and it's exactly why folks give people a pass when they can run a 4.2 or they've got a rocket arm. So at any rate, that's my two cents on it. I don't think it's a big deal one way or the other. So Bucks Nation has... You know, and Gurr, I slammed you guys on Bucks Nation for throwing together that round table because I think that it's exceptionally premature, but you know that I believe that. It is a good article. It's well written, as your articles usually are, but I just don't like that. What else was I going to say? Oh, Jessica asked a question, will there be pewter What the Buck Report shirts coming? I don't know. I have to look at what colors are available in the shirts that we like. We like these shirts by Badger that are dry fit. I got to see what the colors are, and I'm going to see if I can get them in. Last year, we had black and red. We did pewter, I think, 2 years ago, but they were the Hanes cotton, and they were very fucking hot. So we will see what we can do in both men's and female shirts, and we will get those out there as rapidly as possible. So for Spent, for... Kurt, for the whole crew, I can't name everyone, for Jackie and for Eliza and for Calico Jack and good God for the commission. This team is amazing. You'll get to meet them at all these events. Thank you guys for tuning in. We will see you guys next week on Wednesday, I believe, but I will be up in Canton, so we'll figure out how we're going to do that. It's all going to be magical and mysterious. And we'll be doing YouTubes like crazy. So make sure if you're not following us on YouTube and Facebook and Twitter, go do that. Please do share our articles, share our posts, get this word out. We got some really great things coming. We hope to see you at the events. With that being said, I am old school and I am out of here.
So I give zero f-